Now we're holding on Ayin Omer Aleph top line. We've been learning about the issue of well, we've been talking about the issue of what exactly is koina gneva for ganav, is yush enough? Do you need something else with yush? In that connection, we were discussing the what that Rabbi Yochanan says when a person if a person steals something, then neither the original owner nor the ganav is able to be makdish it until the ganav acquires it or until the original owner gets it back. That is, the original owner can't, the ganav can't because not his, and the owner can't because not birshusa. It's not in his physical possession now to be able to be makdish it. We discussed various angles on that. We discussed the Rish Lakish holds differently. We discussed that there's the tsnuim of the Mishnah in Ma'aseh Sheni follow are doing that. They are makdish, or in their case, they're being machal something that's out of their possession. Is that in our would Rabbi Yochanan agree that they're able to do that, or does Rabbi Yochanan or maybe hold according to a different Mishnah, according to our Mishnah in Bava Kamma that says you can't, et cetera? We're discussing all of that back and forth. So now the Gemara is going to talk about another point that's going to, we're from on another point from a different area of Dinei Mamonos that's going to relate to this point about Shnei Meani Mecholim Lahakdish, and then we're going to discuss a little bit about the, so we're going to discuss about the matter of a Harsha. The Gemara talks about, primarily the place it talks about it is in Bava Basra, that a person can, suppose you have, Reuven is owed money for some reason or other. And we'll talk about soon what exactly the case is that Reuven is owed here exactly is if he himself, for whatever reason, is not able to deal with a, with getting it back or to make a din Torah for it, then he can appoint, he can write a shtar harsha, which is a power of attorney. As a power of attorney basically says that Shimon has the right to do this business on Reuven's behalf. And then on that basis, Shimon is able to go and collect it on behalf of Reuven. So we're going to talk about the concept of a Harsha now and details in it that relate to this point of when a person stole something, any yocholak and see how those relate. So the Gemara says, Amri Nahadoi, the Chachamim of Nahadoi said, Loi kasvin an urchasa amataltli. We don't write an urchasa for metaltlin. An urchasa is another name for a shtar harsha. This kind of document where you give power of attorney to somebody else to deal with business, to collect a debt or whatever on your behalf. So the Nahadoi you're saying you don't write such a thing for metaltlin. There is on the side of it here, it brings a different girsa. A number of Rishonim have a girsa instead of urchasa adrachta. And adrachta, actually, strictly speaking, is something a little bit different. And adrachta is not a power of attorney. It's rather, usually it means where based in is giving permission to a Baal Chov to go and find property that belonged, to go and find property, either B'nei Chorin or Meshabodin, that belongs to somebody who owes him money. He lent him money and the guy has defaulted on the debt or whatever, and they write an adrachta, which gives him permission to go look for property that belongs now or that used to belong to him, that he sold to somebody else and to go collect from it. But here, even if we say adrachta, it means the same thing as urchasa, as Rashi explains, we're talking about a shtar harsha. So then how do you're saying you can't write such a thing on metalklin, because you can't write such a thing on metaltlin because it's not in your reshus. How can you say in a shtar hashoah you're going to say go collect what's mine from the other person when it's not certain that it's yours? So Rashi explains we're talking about over here about pikkudin. We're talking about Reuven has a pikkudin that he deposited for safekeeping by somebody. Now he wants to send Shimon as a shliach to go collect it. So then how do you're saying you wouldn't be able to write a hashah for that? Now Tosfos says that no, actually, where it's a pekodin, there's no problem too, because it's a pekodin. What's the problem? The Reuven owns it. Yes, right now it's in the physical possession of the shomer, but so what? That's still considered to be in Reuven's reshus. He wouldn't even be able to be makdish it under those circumstances. So therefore, Tosfos says no, we have to be talking about where The Hashara is needed not because Reuven was mafkid it by the other person, but because it was stolen from Reuven by the other person. So now that fits with everything we were talking about so far about things being stolen, where therefore the Nahadori are saying that you can't write a Hashara for it because, again, you don't have enough reshus over it based on what we were saying before to be able to write a Hashara to be able to empower somebody else to go and collect it. When after all, when you don't have that kind of reshus over it, the same way as you can't be makdish it, the same way you wouldn't the same way you wouldn't be able to write a hashara on it. Ketzoris explains what Rashi is talking about. Rashi might agree that in a regular case of pikadon, you certainly could, like Tois was saying, it does fully belong to you. It's just physically right now located by somebody else. Rather, Rashi would be talking about, say, for example, that it's a pikadon, but the shomer is denying or he's claiming that for example, that you sold it to him or something else. So therefore, that's why you need a hashara in the first place. So then the same thing would apply since you don't have undisputed possession of it, then you wouldn't be able to write a hashara on it. Anyway, Amar Rav Ashi la Meima, my timer. So Rav Ashi asked the Meima, why not? What's wrong with writing a shtar hashara for such a metalpolin? Amalei, so Meima answers, Mishum de Rabbi Yechanan. It's based on what Rabbi Yechanan was saying. The Amar Gozov l'nisiyashra bailim, where as we've been saying in the sugya, that if somebody stole and the owner didn't yet have yush, so on the face of it he didn't have yush, so it still belongs to him. Nevertheless, shneim einim mechayim lahakdish. Neither the owner nor the gazlan is able to be makdish the thing. Zeh l'fisha einu shaloi v'zeh l'fisha einu b'rishosai. The gazlan because not his, and the nigzal, the owner of it, because not in his rishus. So therefore, it's not in his rishus as far as being makdish it. Therefore, he's not able to write. Therefore, he's not considered enough of a balabas on it to be able to write a hashara on it either. So that would be why the Nahadori are saying that he's not able to write a hashara on it. So there's machlokas we showed him. Would he be able to be machneh them to somebody else? But at least a Meimar is saying as far as writing a hashar on it, that not, because a hashar in a shtar hashar, you're writing something to the effect, this property which is mine, I'm giving you the rights to be able to go and act as my substitute and going and getting it. And how can you say which is mine when it's not undisputedly yours based on what Rabbi Yechanan is saying? Okay, Ikadamri, a different version is that the Nahadori didn't say it as a blanket statement that any metaltlin, but rather Ikadamri, Amri Nahadori, loy kasvin and urchasa, am metaltli de kafre, only when it's metaltlin that the other guy denies. So the Mechzik is Shikra, so then it would look like a falsehood. How can you write a Hashar and have Adam sign this property which belongs to me? I'm entitling you to go collect it on my behalf when it's not definitively yours. Avaloi Kafre Kasvinan, if there was no kfira, then according to the second lashon, and that is the halacha, then we could in fact write a shtar hashah, because as long as the other guy wasn't koifer, then yes, we're going to say he has enough reshus over it to be able to write a shtar hashah on it. So now the question is, if you're talking about that he was koifer in it, then Tosfos discusses at some length over here. First of all, Tosfos says nowadays and in their times, the minhag is that they do write a shtar hashah even on metalplin and even when he was koifer. So why should that be? So Tosfos starts by saying, I don't understand why. And then he starts explaining based on a gemara in Shavuos and so forth. And he continues to discuss at some in some detail all the dinim of that. So one thing Tosfos says eventually, what it is basically, in a case like this, you can write the hashara in the sense we consider the Mursha, the one who's holding that shtar hashara and is now going to go and deal with the matter. We consider him as though he's your shliach. So the same way as you can appoint a shliach to do business on your behalf, and you say shlocha shalom kamoisai. That's how it would be over here as well. then there's a good deal of discussion in that connection. So then in that, okay, so actually that'll belong really more to the next piece. But yeah, okay, so Tosfos is saying that in principle, the Nahodoyo saying over here that when Kafre, that when he denied the, when the other guy denied the claim, you can't write a Hausha, but Tosfos is saying that based on other Gemaras, maybe that's not an issue and you could write a Hausha even in that case. And we're not worried about what the Gemara is saying over here, Mechsi Keshikra, that it looks like a falsehood because you can say that you have the right to appoint the guy as a shluch. So since we're talking about a Hausha, and the mechanism by which it works, so now the Nahodoyi also say, if an urchasa, if this shtar harsha, this power of attorney, does not say in it, get involved in a din Torah, go argue or go get involved in a din Torah, v'zochi, and win, the apik lenafshach, and take out the money from the other guy for yourself. If it doesn't say that, less be mashasha, then the urchasa doesn't count for anything. My timer, why would that be? Because Mishum de Omalei Ha'ech La Baal Dvarim Di Di'at. Without that Loshen in it, the other guy can say, you're not my Baal Dvarim, I have business with Reuven. He lent me money, or I stole from him, or whatever exactly the scenario is, why Reuven is saying that I owe him money, or I have to give him this object. You have no business in this matter. I'm not obligated to get involved with you and to go to a din Torah or whatever, or to give you the money or the object or whatever based on what you're saying. So therefore, the Shtar Hausha has to say that Reuven is saying, I want you, Shimon, the Moshe, to be taking this money for yourself. Well, then Shimon comes and says, well, now this is for myself. Therefore, I'm a Baal Dvarim. Therefore, I have business over here, and therefore you have to deal with me. Now there is some discussion about the exact mechanism then by which the question that a number of Rishonim deal with is so why do we even need that? And let's say he doesn't write that Loshen in the Hausha, so what? He's a shliach, like Tosfos just said, and shlucha shalom kamoise. What's the problem? So there's a couple of points. The Mordechai brings from Rabbeinu Yoel, the Rav Yoh, who in turn asked his Shver, the Ravan, one of the Balei HaTosfos, and he says, because the other guy can say, look, what happens if your Meshaleach passed away meanwhile? So then the money belongs to the Yoshim, it doesn't belong to him anymore because he's passed away, and therefore I shouldn't have to give it to you. If you have a shtar harsha, that's one thing. It means that he gave you these nechosim before he passed away. But otherwise, if you don't have a shtar harsha that says that wording that we said here in the Gemara, then la baal dvarim didiyah, you're not my baal dvarim in the sense, as far as I know, the guy could have died by now, and I should be dealing with his yoshim, not with you. In a similar thing, the Urzarua brings a similar idea. He says the Chachamim were concerned, what if the Mishaleach does die before the Shliach does it? And then the Yoshim are going to say, we didn't appoint this guy as our Shliach. So therefore, that's why he needs a Shtar Harsha that says that this property or this object or whatever actually belongs to him, where he says lenafshach, that it's for yourself. So therefore he has every right to do it, because it means it never went to the Yoshim in the first place. Then there's another point. The Rosh makes a different point, that the idea is the Chachamim were concerned, that the Chachamim are concerned, what happens if the original Meshaleach is mevatel the shlichus? So the Rosh learns, once he writes a Shtar Harsha, that takes away the ability from him to revoke that shlichus. Therefore, now the other guy can't say la baal dvarim didiyat, because the shliach is saying, here I have a document that shows that the guy appointed me as his shliach, and in an irrevocable way, he can't change his mind now. But if he doesn't have a document, or it doesn't have that wording in it, then it means the other guy still has an out to be able to take back the shlichus, and therefore the other guy has the right to say la baal dvarim didiyat. Then on top of that, there's others. Achronim talk about further points in it. The Marshal, the Yamshel Shlomo, points out that we can be talking about. You have cases we've learned, for example, in Ksubas, where you go to collect some money from somebody, and he says Sitroi, for example, he says there's a side reason why your Mishaleach owes me other money, and therefore I shouldn't have to give this because I'm being toifus this to pay for something else that he owes me. So only when you have a proper harsha involved, then we're saying that you're able to get then the other guy has to go to a din torah to hash everything out. But if there wasn't a harsha, then if it was just a plain shliach, then the other guy would have every right to say sitroi or any other claim like that. And the Pnei Yeshua says, you had another point. He says that the other guy can say, sure, you're his shliach. But after all, how do you know? Like this, he's making a claim against me, but he's making it through you. How do I know? If he made it directly, maybe he wouldn't have the chutzpah, ain't on a maize pun in there or something like that. And therefore, I want to see him in person and let him make these claims to my face. I don't believe that you have, I don't believe these claims when they come through you. But when he has a harsha, then the other guy doesn't have the ability to do that. So we have a variety of reasons, in short, why it is that that a harsha has this effect that regular shlichus wouldn't. Okay. However, Amar Abaya says you don't always need to write that loshen. You don't always need to write that loshen zil durm uzchi ba'apik lenafshach. That he's telling him, you go take it out for yourself. In other words, that the harsha, he's basically saying this asset now belongs to you. Rather, the ikosbe lemechtz of a shlish v'lervia. Suppose that the shtar harsha says that you can go and then do a din torah and win against the guy, etc., to the extent of a half or a quarter or of a half or a quarter or a third. Then that itself is good enough for him to do a din torah on behalf or to collect on the entire debt. Migo de mishtoi dina apaga. Once he's able to do a din torah and to talk with the other guy without the other guy saying la bal dvarim didi at. For half of it, or for whatever percentage he's entitled to, mishtoi dina akula, then he's able to actually do that for all of it. What's the whole point? In other words, the other guy can say la bal dvarim didiat, you're not my baldover, and therefore I don't have to do any din torah or whatever at your say so. I want to speak to the original guy. But now the shliach comes and says with the harsha, he says, look, the other guy, the Reuven who sent me, made me a 25% owner of this asset. So therefore, for that 25% alone, I have the ability to take you to a din torah. Well, therefore, I have the ability to also argue about the other 75%. After all, the larger the 75%, the larger my 25% will be. So I have an actual financial stake in that, and therefore I have an ability to take you to based in on the whole thing. So in short, we're saying an urchasa, a harsha, has to say one of two lashonis. Either it has to say zil dun v'zochi v'apik l'nafshach, go do the din torah and win it and collect it for yourself, or it has to say that you're entitled to whatever percentage it is of the asset. Okay, the Gemara continues. Amana Meimer, e tofas loy mafkin en mine. If he was toifus, then we don't take it away from him. Now, what do we mean by he was toifus? Rashi has two explanations. The first explanation is that it means, suppose that the harsha does not say either of these lashonis. So we said that in principle, the other guy can say, la bal dvorim didiat, I have no business with you, go away, let Reuven himself come and deal with me. However, if the shliach ended up being toifus money or assets or whatever from the other guy to pay for it, loy makin and mine, even though he doesn't have a proper shtar hasha, nevertheless we won't take it away from him. That Rashi's second explanation is that it means that if the shliach takes the money from the other guy and keeps it for himself. Well, since he has a shtar harsha that says that this asset, that this money or whatever it is, belongs to him, then we don't have the ability to take it away from him, says Amemer. However, Rav Ashi says no. Kiven de kasvele, because he writes in the he disagrees with Amemer. Since he writes in the shtar harsha, he says kol de misani min dina, whatever is responded to by the din torah, meaning whatever you're able to collect from the din. From the din torah, kabela salai, I am I am accepting it on myself. So in other words, he's saying that. So he's saying that that you're entitled to do this on my behalf. But I'm saying that whatever it is that you're zoicha badin in where the word demisani, I mean, there's maloshin honor, whatever they respond to you in the din Torah that you're entitled to collect, kabela salai, I've accepted it on myself. In other words, I accept that whatever they decide in based on your claims, I'm accepting that that decision is valid. And I'm not going to say, for example, yeah, but you should have made better arguments on my behalf. Therefore, shliach shavye. So it comes out he made the other guy a shliach. So according to Rashi's first lashon, then it would mean that even if he that it would mean that that if he took that if he took it without having a proper shtar harshah, we wouldn't allow it. That would be called toifus lebal chayv b'makom shechav la'achayim. The Gemara discusses in various places when Reuven owes people money. And Shimon, who's not one of those people, goes and collects money on behalf of Levi without being Levi's agent, without having a shtar harshah from him. Then that doesn't work because the other people that Reuven owes money to, Reuven also owes money to Yehuda and Yisachar and so forth, and they can say, Shimon, you have no right to collect on behalf of one of the Balei Chovos, and therefore prevent us from collecting. So here, Rashi says, according to the first Lashon, would be the same thing. If there's no proper Shtar HaShah, Rav Ashi is saying he's only a Shliach. He's not a Murshe, and therefore he doesn't have the ability to collect without having a proper Shtar HaShah. According to Rashi's second explanation, that was saying that the Shliach tries to keep the money for himself, saying, look, after all, it says in the Shtar HaShah that it belongs to me, so therefore I shouldn't have to return it to the Meshaleach. We tell him no, because the fact is that the shtar says that whatever was done and based in I accept on myself. Therefore, it means that he made him only a shliach and not the actual owner of the property to the extent that he should actually be able to keep it. Others say that by writing that lashon and the shtar, he hasn't made him a shliach. He's made him a shutf. He's made him a partner in the ownership of this thing. So the Gemara says, "L'mayin nafkamina, what's the practical difference whether he's a partner or a shliach?" So first of all, the mitpas kalva. What happens if he wants to grab or to keep half the money? So if he's a shutef, then he's able to grab half of it, and the refluence, he'd even be able to be mevatel his shlichus at that point. But if you say he's a shliach, then no, he's not able to keep any of it. The final halacha is that he is in fact a shliach, and therefore he can't be toifus for himself. Whatever he's toifus goes to the mishaleach. So the Rif points out that this line, v'hilchus shliach shavye, actually comes from Rabbi Yehudoi Goin, and therefore it's not part of the original Gemara. Nevertheless, though, that is the accepted halacha among the Rishonim, that a Mursha, somebody who's holding a Shtar HaShah, is considered only a Shliach, not considered a partner, and therefore that means, so according to the Rosh, it means that once there's a Shtar HaShah, then the Mishaleach can't revoke it. But more to the point, it means therefore that whatever it is that this Mursha did is considered to have been done on behalf of the Mishaleach. And we say shlocha shalom kamoise, but the point is he doesn't have the ability to try to keep any of it for himself, and then to say, look, I have a hashah. It says that it's meant that I'm doing this business on my own behalf. We tell them, no, the fact is you're only a shliach, and therefore you have to return whatever it is that you got to the mishaleach. Okay. So again, all of that we brought in, really this kind of discussion belongs in Baba Basra. Or in Shavuos, but in fact, this sugya is found in Masechta Shavuos as well. But here the Gemara brought it in because of the connection with what we said before. We're going to Rabbi Yochanan that if somebody stole something, then now neither the original owner nor the gazlan is able to be makdish it. And at first we said the Nahadori's original din was based on that premise, but then we said the second version of their din, which is accepted lahalacha, is that usually you could write a hashah for something that's in the other guy's possession only if he's koifer in it. Can you not? And again, according to Tosfos, even if he's koifer in it, you could on the basis of other Gemara, including in Shavuos, that imply that you're able to do that. Okay. So now getting back to the subject of our perek, which is the Tashlumi Kefil and Tashlumi Abav Hamisha of the Ganav. So now the Mishnah is going to talk about various cases where there's a where you would think he might not have to pay Tashlumi Kefil or Tashlumi Abav Hamisha, and yet he does. The following Mishnah on Ayin Dalet Amud Beis is going to talk about the contrast cases where he does not have to pay them. So the Mishnah says, "Ganav apishnayim." If a person stole on the and there were two edim that he stole, the tovach machar apihem, and then later on he shechted or stole the animal on the basis of the same edim. So the same edim are coming to Beis Din and testifying that he stole the animal and then he sold it or then he shechted. Oy apishnayim acherim, or another possibility: two edim come and say that he stole it; two other edim came and say that he shechted or stole. So either way, Mishalom Tashlume Abav Hamisha, either way, he's paying Tashlume Abav Hamisha because you have Eidos that he, because you have Eidos that in fact he did that. We'll see in the Gemara what the Chiddush of that is. Gonav Mocha B'Shabbos. What happens if he stole and then sold it on Shabbos? Now, the stealing itself is not, now, of course, we have the concept of Kom Leib Dedab Amine, which is talked about in many places in Shas. We had it earlier in our Masechta as well. So if what he does is something that's going to be mechayev him misa, then he's going to be potter from tashlumin. But if he steals it and sells it on Shabbos, well, the selling on Shabbos is only also derabbanan. So therefore, obviously, he's not chayev misa for that. As far as the gonav, we'd have to be talking about that either it means that he stole it during the week and now he's selling it on Shabbos, or it could be that he stole it on Shabbos itself, but in a way that he's not mechal Shabbos by doing that. So for example, let's say it remained in the reshus of the owner. You could have different cases like that. As opposed to, in other words, the point is the next Mishnah is going to contrast that if he shechted it on Shabbos. Now shechting it is already one of the 39 malachas, so he'd be chayav misa for that. And of course, even if there were no edim, we say that even we've learned earlier in the Masechta, and we learned in various places in Shas that when kom lebe derab amine applies, even if there's no actual chiyuv misa, as long as it's an action that would have gotten him misa had there been edim bahasra. So therefore, so if he shechts it on Shabbos, then he's potter from tashlum abav chamisha because kom lebe derab amine. But here, where he only sold it on Shabbos, and again, we could be talking about he had stolen it earlier during the week, or even we could be talking about he stole it on Shabbos without having committed a malacha, then therefore, so he's, hey, there's no kom lebe derab amine, therefore he's chayev to pay. Similarly, gonav malacha lavad azara. Similarly, if he stole the animal and then sold it to a temple of Avodah Zarah, for example. So again, the next Mishnah is going to talk about if he shechts it for Avodah Zarah, then he's chayev skila for that, for skila or kores or whatever it is. But here where he only sold it, there's no chiyuv misa involved. Therefore, he's chayev to pay. Ganav v'tavach b'yom kippurim. Similarly, if he stole it and shechted it on Yom Kippur, same thing, because Yom Kippur. And again, because stealing it in and of itself is not a malacha, depending whether there was hotzah mirushus l'rushus, but there doesn't necessarily have to be. There is, by the way, there are other places in Shas where the Gemara discusses the question. There are opinions that say the whole concept of hotzah doesn't even apply on Yom Kippur. According to those opinions, you would be allowed to carry on Yom Kippur. The halacha, of course, is not like that. Yom Kippur is like Shabbos as far as all malachas. So according to them, you'd have to say the same. According to that, you'd have to say the same possibilities, either that it means he stole it before Yom Kippur and now on Yom Kippur he sold it, or it means that he stole it on Yom Kippur itself without committing a malacha. Whatever, then he sold it to somebody else. So again, there's no chiyuv misa involved. Now, the next Mishnah is going to talk about what happens when he shechts it on Yom Kippur. Now, shechting it on Yom Kippur makes him chayiv kores. Is that enough to patter him from paying? That we're going to deal with over there, because the question will be, well, actually, the next Mishnah is actually not going to mention Yom Kippur at all. There is, in various places in Shas, we have the opinion of Rav Nechunya ben Hakona, who says that that a chiyuv kores is also enough to trigger kom lebe derab amine. Actually, I should say this is not the next Mishnah, but the Mishnah after next. The next Mishnah is Ayin Beis Amud Beis. Whatever. The point is, when we're saying over here that he sold it on Yom Kippur, there's definitely no iser kores involved, because stealing is not a malacha. I mean, not stealing. Selling is not a malacha. If he had shechted on Yom Kippur, then we'd have to talk about, according to Rav Nachunya ben Akana, he would be potter on the grounds of Kam Levi D'Rabbi Mineh, because Rav Nachunya ben Akana holds that an Isur Kores is also enough to trigger Kam Levi D'Rabbi Mineh. The Chum disagree and say only when there's Misas based in quality. Anyway, the Mishnah continues. So in all those cases, he's paying Tashlum Abav Chamisha. Also, Ganav Mishal Aviv. What if he stole the animal from his father, the Tavachu Machar, and he shechted it or stole it, V'achakach Mes Aviv, and then his father died? He's still going to be, now he's one of the Yoshin. Nevertheless, he's still going to have to pay the Tashlum Abav Chamisha. He's going to have to, So as far as Yom Kippur, our Mishnah had actually mentioned Gona V'Tavach Yom Kippurim, because again, even if he shechted on Yom Kippur, it's only an Isur Kodesh, and there's no Kam Levi D'Rabbi Mineh when it comes to that, according to the Chachamim, against Rav Nachunya ben Akana. So yeah, Gona Mishal Aviv, if he stole it from his father, V'Tavach Omachar, and then he shechted it or stole it, or sold it, V'Achakach Mes Aviv, and then his father died, so then he's also paying Tashlum Abav Chamisha to his brothers. As opposed to, Rashi says later on, the Mishnah later on is going to talk about what happens if he what happens if his father died before he shechted or sold it. Then it's different. Then shaloyu teveach, shaloyu moicher. At that point, he inherited it from his father, or at least he inherited something of the nechassim, which could include this, and therefore you can't be mechayev him for tavach omachar. That's why our Mishnah is stressing that his father was still alive when he did the tavach omachar, so it wasn't his yet. He hadn't yarshed it yet. What happens, by the way, if he's the only Yodish? We're going to deal with that. We're going to deal with that eventually. Anyway, so in all those cases, or also Gana V'Tavach V'Achakach Hikdish, what about if he stole it and shechted it, and then he was Makdish, the shechted animal? Obviously, he's not Makdish as a korban. We mean he's Makdish it as Kedushas Domim, to Bedek Abayis, where now it's an asset of the Beis Hamikdash, which they can sell to raise funds for the Beis Hamikdash. So in all those cases, Mashalom Tashlum Abav Chamisha. So he's paying Tashlum Abav Chamisha because in each case there's nothing blocking it. Basically, again, when he sold it on Shabbos, he wasn't over on a melacha of Shabbos. When he sold it to Avodah Zarah, he wasn't over on something that would make him chayev misa that has to do with Avodah Zarah, as opposed to shechting it. If he stole it or if he shechted it on Yom Kippur, there's only kores involved, not misas based in. So no kam levi d'rabbi mineh. If he stole from his father, well, his father was still alive when he shechted or sold it. Therefore, it's not shaloyu teveach shaloyu mocher. So he has to pay the tashlum abav chamisha to his father. And what happens if his father passed away in between? Then he has to pay it to his brothers. And when he was makdish it only after he shechted it. So therefore, the tashlum abav chamisha kicked in before it belonged to hekdish. Therefore, he has to pay that. Again, the following mishnayos are going to point out contrasts between these things. What about, continues the Mishnah, Gana V'Tavach L'Refua O'Leklovim? What happens? He stole the animal and then he shechted it for Refua. So he's not eating it in order, he's not shechting it to eat the meat. He's shechting it because he wants to use the meat for some kind of medicinal purpose. Or O'Leklovim, or he shechts it because he wants to feed the meat to dogs. Or V'Hashokhiv Nimtzes Trefa. What about if he shechts the animal and it turns out? If he shechts it and it turns out to be treif, so now he can't eat it, and now it has to be thrown to the dogs. Or hashochet chulin ba'azara, or if the animal was chulin and he shechted it in the azara, which now, as we learned in extensively in kedushin, is now also bahana. So in all those cases, nevertheless, Mishalom Tashlum Abav Chamisha, he still pays the Tashlum Abav Chamisha, because the fact is he did steal the animal and he did shecht it. Reb Shimon Poter B'Shnei Elu, Reb Shimon Pater was in those last two cases because Reb Shimon holds of a concept that we're going to learn in the Gemara called Shchita She'ena Re'uya Lo Shma Shchita. Reb Shimon holds that a Shchita is a valid Shchita only if it's Roy, only if the result of it would be that you're able to eat the meat. So in the cases where he shechted L'Refua, he had the ability to eat the meat, he didn't want to, he decided to use it for L'Refua, or to throw it to the dog. So therefore, that doesn't prevent it from being a shchita ru'uya. But where the animal turned out to be treif, where therefore the Torah blocks him from eating it, or chulin ba'azara, same thing, because it's also ba'na, And then Rav Shimon says those are examples of shchita she'ein ra'uya, and Rav Shimon holds such a thing is not considered a valid shchita. And if it's not a valid shchita, then he's not chayev for the tashlum above chamisha, because that only applies utvachay, only if he shechted it a proper shchita. We'll see about that point. We'll see about that point in the Gemara later on Daf Ayin Aleph Ayin Beis. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Lema mas nisin deloy kudav akiva. Should we have to say that our Mishnah that said at the beginning of the Mishnah we had the case where Reuven and Shimon are Edom that he stole, and then Levi and Yehuda are Edom that he sold it or shechted it. Now, Lema mas nisin deloy kudav akiva. Does that mean that we'd have to say that our Mishnah is not like Rav Akiva? De'i Rav Akiva ha'amad davar v'lo chatzi davar. Doesn't Rav Akiva say that when the pasuk says al pish shnayim edim yokum davar, a matter has to be established by two edim? Rav Akiva says the reason why the Torah stresses the word davar is to say v'lo chatzi davar, that it means not if the edim are testifying to only half of a situation. Now, you have to consider over here. If Edom come and say that he shechted or stole an animal, is he chayev anything for that? Of course not. Without Edom that he stole it, then it's his own animal that he's shechting or selling. Nothing wrong with that. There has to be first Edom that he stole it in order for the Edom that he shechted it or sold it to mean anything. Now, on the face of it, Rav Akiva would call that chatzi davar. So according to him, how could you have Edom come and say only that he stole it or that he shechted it? Wouldn't they have to first be testifying that the same Edom that he stole it? And D'tanya, we see in a braisa that Rav Akiva holds that way. D'tanya, Amar Rav Yossi, Kshaholach Abba Chalafta Eitzel Rav Yechon Manuri Lumud Torah, when my father Chalafta went to Rav Yechon Manuri to learn Torah. Chalafta was Rav Yossi's father's name. There's a bit of discussion about how we can say Abba Chalafta. You're not allowed to call your father by his name. Some posts can explain that if he prefaces it with a title, like here he's saying Abba, which means my father, which is also, Abba was also used as a title of respect back then, equivalent nowadays of like Mr. or Reb or something like that, then that would be allowed. Others say that not. And what it means is he himself said Abba, and the Gemara, the editors of the Gemara, Ravina and Ravashi, stuck in the word Chalafta over here, because otherwise we wouldn't know Rabbi Yossi's father's name. Anyway, so when he went Eitzel Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri Lomad Torah, when he went to learn Torah by Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri, the Amri Law, or others say the other way around, Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri Eitzel Abba Chalafta, the other way, according to the second version, the other way around, Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri went to learn Torah by Rabbi Chalafta. So obviously it must be. They both belong to the same generation. They were both great Talmid Chachamim. So there's different versions among them, which one went to learn by which one. Anyway, Omer Loi, so he said to him, whichever one was the Talmud, asked the following question to whichever one was the Rebbe. He said, now we know, of course, the concept of chazaka, that if a person has a possession of a field or other kind of real estate like that for 3 years, then we consider that he owns it, even if he doesn't have a shtar to prove it. We're going to learn about that in Baba Basra in a few months' time, Be'ez Hashem. With the idea being, of course, that as the Gemara explains, that you can't expect a person to hold on to his shtar forever. Suppose we have two edim that say that he ate the produce of this field for 1 year. Shnia b'fnei shnayim, then two more edim come and say that he ate the produce for the second year. Shlishis b'fnei shnayim, and another two come and say he did that the third year. Mahu, what's the din? Would that be good enough that we can combine together the three edus and say, therefore now he has a chazaka? Or would we say, no, we have to have one set of edim testifying about the entire 3 years? Omar Loi, so the other one, who is the Rebbe, answered him, Harezo chazaka. Yes, it is a valid chazaka, because the fact is we have edus of 3 years. So the Talmud says, Afani Oymakain, you know what, I agree with that also. The only reason I'm asking, Elisha Rabbi Akiva Cholik Badover, because Rabbi Akiva is disagreeing, Shahi Rabbi Akiva Oymadover Velechatzi Dover, because Rabbi Akiva says that when it says in the pasuk Dover means not Chatzi Dover, and each of these is only a Chatzi Dover in the sense, because you need 3 years for Chazaka, and each group of Edom is testifying only about 1 year. So now the Gemara is assuming by the same token, then Rabbi Akiva would not accept Edus from Edim that come and say Tovach Omachar, because Beis Din would tell them, wait, that's only half a dover. What are you telling me? Tovach Omachar, without first telling us whether it was his animal or whether he stole it. However, the Gemara says, "Amar Abaye afilu tamer Rabbi Akiva." No, you could even say that our Mishnah does go like Rabbi Akiva. Miloi moded Rabbi Akiva b'shnayim omen kiddush or shnayim omen baal. Consider, wouldn't Rabbi Akiva have to agree if you have two edim come and say that a certain man was makadish a certain woman, and then two other edim come and say that there was bia involved? Now Rashi explains we're talking about there was znus. In other words, so Reuven and Shimon come and say that he was makadish this woman in Nissen, and then Levi and Yehuda come and say that she committed znus with somebody else in Ir. So obviously, if Edom come and just say that she was Mizana with somebody in Ir, and you don't have before them Edom that say that she was Mekodesh, nothing's going to happen. Of course, we don't have any evidence that she's an Eishes Ish. She's not going to be Chayiv Misa. To make her Chayiv Misa, we need the original Edom Kedushin. Nevertheless, Rabbi Akiva would agree that we can accept the second set of Edim by themselves. The Afagav, the Ede Bia, Tzricha, the Ede Kedushin, it is true that the Ede Bia have to have Ede Kedushin beforehand. Without them, without that, their Ede Sabia means nothing, but the reverse is not true. Given the Ede Kedushin, like Tzricha, the Ede Bia, the fact is the Edim of Kedushin stand on their own. When two people come to Beis Din and testify that this woman is Mekodesh, that's enough. Now that's enough to establish that she's an Eishes Ish, and they don't require any Eidos after that. So Dover, Kodin and Bey, therefore we can call the Eidic Kedushin by themselves is considered a Dover, and therefore the Eidic Bia alone is also considered a Dover, is also considered a matter of its own, where therefore even Rabbi Akiva would agree that we can accept their Eidos and we can execute her on the basis of that. Basically, the Maharat Chayos explains the Eidic Kedushin are saying a complete dover. They said a complete thing, and we accept their Eidos. Therefore, so now we know she's an Eishes Ish. Now, when the other Eidim are coming, then it's also considered a dover, v'lechatzi dover, because they're saying this woman already has a chazaka of an Eishes Ish by virtue of the first Eidim. So now we're coming to say a dover that this woman was Mizana and therefore that she should be Chayiv Misa. So it's not considered a Chatzi dover. It's true, in other words, had there not been Edim that she was, or any evidence that she was Mekodesh, then we would tell the second set of Edim, it's very nice you're telling us, what are we supposed to do about it? But now that there already exists the first Edus, which by itself was a whole dover and established her as an Eishes Ish, then the second Edus by itself, even Rabbi Akiva is going to agree, can be considered a dover. Well, applying that to our Mishnah, it's the same kind of thing. If Levi and Yehuda only came and said that this fellow, Tova Chamacher, then based on tell them, and do you have any evidence that it's not his animal that there's a problem? But now that you have earlier Edim that already come and say that Gunav, that itself is a Dover, and therefore now when other Edim come and say Tova Chamacher, that can also be considered Dover rather than Chatzi Dover. So even Rabbi Akiva would agree with our Mishnah, that's fine. When is Rabbi Akiva talking about? Is the case of Chazaka, for example, where saying that he ate the produce of this field during the second year is meaningless without the second and third, because 1 year is not enough for chazaka. And the same thing with the second, and the same thing with the third. Each one is interdependent with the other one. That's what Rabbi Akiva would call chatzidah.
Now, in the case with the animal, yes, but the woman, it's the one woman, but here, everyone has cattle.
That's the point. That's why we need the Eidos first that he's gone out.
That he stole
this particular animal. Sure. Now, by the way, this that we're saying over here, this that we're giving the example, Kiddush v'achaka, Kiddush, Shnaimim and Boal. So again, Rashi understands that we're talking about that there were Eide Kiddushin, and then later on, there was Eidos that there was Znus. The Rosh understands differently. It means not Znus. It just means, in other words, there are two Eidim, that this guy was Makadisher, and later on, there were two Eidim that he was Boil her, and therefore she became fully his wife as far as Yerusha and as far as other things. Same idea, in other words, that if Edom were to just come and say Baal, that wouldn't necessarily be enough to establish anything. We'd just say Be'elas Nus. But now that we have Eide Kedushin beforehand, and that by itself is considered a Dover Sholem, because Kedushin by itself is enough to change her status as far as being Chayiv Misa and as far as various other things, then now, later on, when the Edom come and say Baal, that the same husband we're talking about, not Znus, so that's enough by itself. That's also considered a Dover, and even Rabbi Akiva would agree that that's a fine Edus. The fact is, we kind of have that nowadays. When we have a wedding, we have the Eidei Kedushin, the ones who observe him putting the ring on her finger, which is the Kedushin. Then we have Eidei Yichud. We have the Eidim that see them go into the Yichud room. They don't necessarily have to be the same Eidim. Very often they are, but I don't think they're required to be, because again, it's not Chatzi Dover. Because once we have the first Eidim that she was Mekodesh, then the second Eidim are also considered to be testifying on a Dover Shalom. So therefore, fine. So our Mishnah can work out according to Rabbi Akiva as well. So Hochinami, that's what the Gemara says. The same thing over here. Afagab the Eidit Tvichat, Srichel, Eidit Gneva. It's true that the Eidim on the Shechting don't mean anything without there being Eidit Gneva first. But given the Eidit Gneva, but Srichel, Eidit Tvicha, but the Eidim that are testifying to the Gneva don't require the Eidim of the Shechting. All by itself, the Eidim of the Gneva are testifying on a Dover Shalom. This guy now owes because he stole an animal. So therefore, so that's already considered. So Dover Koden Bay, even Rabbi Akiva would say it's considered a Dover, and the other Eidim are not considered that they're testifying only to a Chatzi Dover. So again, as opposed to the case involving the chazaka, where each one of them depends on the other, because no one eidos on one year is enough to establish anything. So our Mishnah would work even according to Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara says, "V'rabbanan hay dover v'lo chatzi dover l'mu'uti mai." Well, we've said Rabbi Akiva holds that dover v'lo chatzi dover. What do the Chachamim have to say to that? How are they? What are they darshining from that word dover? If apparently we said before, Rabbi Chalafta and Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri disagree with Rabbi Akiva, and they say that the Eidim can be made on chatzi dover, but the fact is the pasuk says dover. So what are they? So how do they learn it? So the answer is l'mu'uti echad oima echad begaba. Suppose that we have Eidim that are testifying about a girl that she has shtei sairus, which is relevant from many areas of halacha. It means, in other words, now if she commits znus, then if she commits znus to any avera, she's going to be subject to punishment. But before shtei sairus, she won't be. Kedushin would be valid kedushin for her, etc. So suppose that one set of Eidim. So suppose you have two Eidim. One of them, one aide says that I saw one of those hairs begaba. Now begaba literally means on her back. Rashi actually translates bekishrei etzbaiseha, that I saw the hair on the joints of her fingers. So bepashtus, I guess maybe Rashi means once eventually a woman develops shtei sairus, eventually she also develops hair on other areas of her body. So therefore, now one of them is saying, I saw a hair on her fingers or on her toes or whatever, and that implies that she already has sairus in makom erva as well. But he's saying only that. Other rishonim explained, begaba would mean on the back of the area of the erva. It doesn't have to be bechlal. I mean, you have the same way by men and by women. You have the definition of shtei sairus. It can be anywhere in that general vicinity. It doesn't have to be davka on the actual genitals themselves. Just close enough to there. So therefore, one of them, for example, was saying that from the back. He saw one hair, doctor or whatever. Yeah, but Derech Klal, by the way, that Amman points out based on other Gemaras, usually when we have to check a girl to see whether she's a Naira, whether she has Shtei Sairus, usually we'll have women check her and report their findings to Beis Din. But here maybe also we could be talking about that one of these women are sane, but here on the face of it, we're talking about actual Adim. So whatever one of them happened to see. And the other one says that I saw hair on Kresa, which literally means her stomach. So again, it could mean the front and back of Oseh Mokum, or it could be, in fact, Rashi himself explains that elsewhere, that Begaba would be underneath Oseh Mokum, and it would be the back and the front, whatever. The point is, it means that, so each aid is only saying he saw one hair, so that's, the Chachamim would agree that that's Dover, but like Chatzi Dover, that's not an acceptable aidus, because you need two aidim to have seen the same thing. And here, each one only saw one hair. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? That's not only chatzi dover, that's a half an edus. because you need two edim to testify to anything. In the case of the chazaka, you have two edim that he ate the peris of the land for 1 year, and another two edim for the second year, and another. So each pair of edim are testifying about one full thing. It's just incomplete because you need 3 years for chazaka. Here, you don't even have two edim aren't even testifying on the same thing. Of course, such an edus is not valid. The chum don't even need to darshan from a posik that it would be no good. In fact, Tosfos points out the distinction when it comes to, first of all, when it comes to the Edim on the field that the Reuven and Shimon say the first year, Levi and Yehuda say the second year, etc., each set of Edim saw everything that they could possibly see. As opposed to over here, if she actually has Shdei Cyrus, how is it that only one aid says he only saw one and the other one says he only saw the other? But so there's something wrong with that aid.
One aid saw one here, another one saw also the same thing, but this is a different hair.
So that's but the fact is it's a different hair. They have to be testifying to the same thing. Yeah. So that's what the Gemara is pointing out. Also Tosfos brings from the Rif, another reason why there's a difference is because when it comes to the Eidei Chazaka, there is actually a certain nafkamina of their testimony. Namely, what happens if the guy can't establish Chazaka? He doesn't have proper Eidos to establish that he has Chazaka. So what happens then? The field has to be given back to the other person who's saying that it's my field. You stole it from me, or you were supposed to buy it from me and you never paid me, or whatever the possibilities are. So we're going to take it away from him. And on the basis of these Eidim, we're also going to make him pay back the Peiros that he ate. So say, for example, you know, he has Eidim that he ate the produce of the field during the year, Tufshin Pei Beis. Then you have others, Tufshin Pei Gimel, others, Tufshin Pei Dalet. We said, Rabbi Akiva holds, that's not valid Eidos. What are we going to do then? The fact is, we have Eidos that he ate Peiros from the field in Tufshin Pei Beis, Gimel Dalet. He's going to owe that to the owner of the field. So therefore,
why couldn't Rabbi Akiva say that?
Because according to Rabbi Akiva, you need Dover, Velechatzi Dover. You need one set of Eidos that testify to all 3 years. But on the other hand, the fact is, we have Eidim that he ate Peiros from a field that it turns out is not his for another year. So each set of Eidim is actually accomplishing something in terms of making him have to pay for those Peiros. They're accomplishing the opposite of what he wanted. He was bringing them to show that he has Chazaka. It ends up backfiring on him and he ends up having to pay. But the point is, those Eidim are accomplishing something, as opposed to our case over here of Echad B'Gabba, of Echad B'Kresa. Neither Eid is accomplishing anything because you can't declare the girl a Gdola on the basis of such Eidus. But the point is, yes, the Chachamim would say that's not a valid Eidus, but you don't need a Pasuk to tell us that. That's obvious that there's that big distinction. So again, you have the two reasons that Tosfos says, either because in the case of Chazaka, at least they saw everything that was available for them to see, whereas here not, or because the fact is there they actually has a nafkamina, because it actually causes him to pay for the payers, and here it has no nafkamina at all.
There is something here, because there is one complete here. Each one sees
one. No, but one hair is not enough. You need two hairs, Shtei Cyrus.
Yeah, but two Aiden saying
okay. No, because it doesn't work. So that's the Gemara answers. Ella, rather, Lama'uti, suppose that two Edim say that she has one hair on Gaba, and two Edim say that she has on Kresa. So each one would be Chatzidover. Hani Amriktanihi, Vahani Amriktanihi. In effect, each set of Edim is saying we saw only one hair, therefore we say she's still a Ktan. So therefore, they can't combine. Even the Chachamim would agree that that's considered Dover Vale Chatzidover, and we can't accept their Edims. Because neither one is testifying to a complete two hairs, as opposed to, again, by the Chazaka, each one is testifying to a complete year. And again, first, according to Tosfos, there's two reasons. First of all, that means they saw everything that was available to see. We can't expect them to see something they weren't there for. And also because the fact is, it does have an implication, Mahalocha, in making the guy pay for the Paris. So we have like this, in other words, in the case, so to summarize so far, in the case where one aid comes and says one hair and one aid comes and says the other hair, it's not aidos and there's no chidush in that, that is no aidos. In the case where two aidim come and say, one hair and two other aidim come and say one hair, also not valid aidos. That we need the Chachamim need to darshan from the word dover v'lechatzi dover. So everybody would still agree that's not valid Eidos and she's still considered a Ktana. It would have to be that two Eidim actually saw two hairs, that two Eidim both saw two hairs.
Two Eidim saw one hair and two Eidim saw the other
thing. No, two Eidim saw two hairs.
Oh.
Yeah, that has to be that they actually saw
two. Two see one, two see.
That's what we just said in the Gemara. That's what we're saying. That would be considered Chatzidot.
Also that.
Yeah. Then what about, so now, so if two Edom come and say they saw two hairs, obviously that's a completely valid Eidos, and everybody's going to agree to that. In the case of Chazakah, when you have two Edom for 1 year, two Edom for another, etc., Rabbi Akiva is going to hold that's no good. The Chachamim will hold that's a good Eidos. You can combine the three sets of Edom together.
The Chachamim case would hold those.
The Chachamim, and so they're the ones who say as far as the Shnei Cyrus, yeah. And in the case of our Mishnah, where, and it says in the case of our Mishnah, where two Edom say that Ganav and two Edom say Tavach HaMachar, for sure everybody will agree, even Rabbi Akiva, that the second set of Edom are giving a valid Edus, and it's not Chatzi Dover, because the Edom before them already said a complete Dover by saying that he stole. And it was already established that he stole, and therefore now saying that he was Tavach HaMachar means something.
Who hold by field, two Edus can build up 1 year they saw Chazaka, but by if they have two Edus to say we saw here number one and two other Edus say we see number two, that doesn't.
So the difference is because, so the difference is again, that's what Tosfos is saying. There's two reasons to draw that distinction. First of all, when you have Edus that he ate the produce of the field for an entire year, means the Edom were there, they saw what they saw, then they left. We can't expect them to see something that wasn't there, that they weren't there for. When it comes to the Shtei Cyrus, how is it that each set of Edom only saw one hair? If she actually had two hairs on her body at that time, we should have had both, each set of Edom should have been able to see both hairs. So there's something incomplete in their Edus itself. And then the second reason is because when it comes to the field, it has an implication as far as in paying for the payrus, as opposed to suppose that there was only one set of Edom that said only one hair, that would be meaningless. One hair doesn't make a gdola yet. So therefore, so even when you have each one saying one hair, that's not enough to create an Edom. Okay. Next, the Mishnah had said Ganav Mocha B'Shabbos. We said you have a case where the person stole and sold the animal on Shabbos, and we said there's no Kum Leib D'Rabbanei. So the Gemara says, V'Hatanya, don't we learn in a Braisa Potter that there would be that if he sells it on Shabbos he would be Potter because Kum Leib D'Rabbanei. So to say that there's no Kum Leib D'Rabbanei is easy enough to understand. Selling is only also on Shabbos Midrabanan, or actually technically Midivrei Kabbalah. It's based on Psukim and Yeshaya, but it's still not an Issur D'Oraisa. It's not one of the 39 Melachas, so there's no Misa, but there's a Braisa that says Potter. So how we understand? Omar Rami Bachoma, Pitanya, he de Potter. You know what the case is where we're saying that he's Potter, but Oimer Loi. Suppose that one person says to another, "Akoitz l'cha te'ena b'tein nasi b'tikni l'ch gnivusach." He tells him, "You can pick figs from my tree, and thereby you will." So, in other words, what do we have over here? You have the original Ganav Ruvain. He now wants to sell the animal to Shimon. So what he says to Shimon is. So Shimon, who's buying the animal, says, you go pick some figs from my fig tree, for example, v'tikneli gnivusach, and with that you'll be machna me the gneva. So in other words, we're going to make a trade over here: my figs for your behemoth. So therefore, so now when the guy, so in other words, we're not just talking about that money is changing hands. That would be only an issur de rabbanan. Here we're talking about that he's actually doing a malacha in order to get what he's being paid for the animal. It's basically kinyan chalifin, yeah. So now when he harvests those figs on Shabbos, then he's chayiv misa for that, or at least there would be chayiv misa if there's eidim basra, and that's enough to trigger kum leib d'rabbanei. Tosfos actually deals with the question that where exactly is this taking place? Whose chotzer is it in at the time that we should say that he's koine anything? In particular, now we're mentioning the concept of chalifin. The fact is that the Gemara discusses in Bav Metzia the opinion of Reb Nachman, which is accepted by halacha, that says peres lo abdi chalifin. Peres are not a valid thing to use for kinyan chalifin. For a kinyan chalifin, you have to use a keli. For example, when we do mecheres chametz, we use the rov's gautel or pen or whatever. It can't be peres. So in that case, then we're not working over here on the basis of kinyan chalifin. So one possibility is we don't mean actual chalifin over here. We just mean that he is a chalifin means, in other words, as kinyan sudr, where you're just using the sudr as a symbolic transaction, where you're actually using it as the means of exchange. Over here, he wants to sell the animal for figs. Then Rabbeinu Tam learns that would be fine. But the reed says we're talking about over here. Fine, it can basically be considered. It's not really the point is that we could distinguish whether it's a matana or whether it's a mechira. So we can say that. In other words, if we're talking about over here, it's in chatzar halekeach, then we would consider it a matana, and tashlumi abav chamisha do apply to a matana as well. Anyway. So that would be the answer. So the Mishnah is talking about the normal case where Reuven the Ganav is selling the animal for money. So there's no malacha of Shabbos being done. Therefore, no kumli b'dirabimine, and therefore he's chayev. But the Braisa is talking about where Reuven is selling it for where Reuven is selling it for figs that he's going to pick, and he picks them on Shabbos. So then there's kumli b'dirabimine. However, Amri, but they ask the kiven diki tov like kamon b'dina. Now suppose that Reuven were to go to Beis Din and suppose rather the other way around. If Shimon, the owner, so we have Reuven the Ganav, and we have Shimon, the one he wants to sell it to. Suppose that Reuven did go and pick those figs on Shabbos. Suppose he didn't give the animal to Shimon. Now Shimon comes to Beis Din and says, Reuven, we had a deal over here. Either give me the animal or give me back my figs. If he did that, we would not go tell the Gan of Reuven to go pay to Machai Benafshayu, because after all he was Machai Benafshay, and we would say come live with. So then in that case, so in that case, the sale is not really considered a sale in the first place. So if Beis Din doesn't have the ability to enforce the terms of the sale, how can it be considered a sale? So in effect, the animal still belongs to the ganim. So then there's no mechira. So how is he supposed to be chayiv for tashlum abav chamisha that we can talk about that then there would come the d'avimine would kick in and patter him from it? There's no mechira in the first place. So Ella Amara Papa, we have to construct a different scenario. You're right. The case that we were just talking about, where he says pick some figs, then you're right, that wouldn't be considered a mechira because it's not enforceable in Beis Din. In other words, we would say, look, Reuven has been meschayev benafshay, therefore he's potter from paying under the rules of Kamal Ibidiram. So the Papa says you have as follows. Suppose that Shimon says to Reuven, you throw what you stole this animal, throw it into my chotzer, and thereby I will be koni your gneva through kinyan chotzer, and then I'll pay you for it. So now Reuven goes and throws it in. He's chayev for hitzav achnas of a Shabbos. So again, come live with the rabbi. So now we can't say anymore that it's not enforceable in Beis Din. We certainly could tell Shimon to pay because Shimon's not chayev misa. He was the recipient of it. So that would be the scenario that the Braisa is saying.
He was from the gun.
Shimon was buying it from the gun. So there we have a case where the mechira would be a valid mechira. And if we came to Beis Din, it would be enforceable in the sense we would say to Shimon, look, I mean, you're buying from a Ganav, you shouldn't have done that. But the fact is, he held up his end of the deal. Therefore, you have to hold up your end, and you have to pay him the money. So it is a valid mechira. However, Reuven is meschayev benafshei because he did a malacha on Shabbos, and therefore he's potter for the tashlama abav chamisha that he would be chayev for selling the stolen animal. So the Papa says that's the scenario that we can construct where the Braisa would say that potter. So again, the Mishnah would be talking about a regular case where Reuven sells the animal to Shimon in the normal way. There's no malacha of Shabbos. The Braisa would be talking about this particular contrived example where he's doing a malacha in order to make the sale happen by throwing it into the other guy's chotzer. However, the Gemara says, Kaman Kerabakiva. Well, that would seem to be. But Papa's answer would seem to work only according to Rabakiva. Dama Klotuk Misha Hun Chadamia. Rabakiva holds in Masechta Shabbos that when you have something, a person throws something from one Rishus to the other, as soon as it gets into the airspace of the other Rishus, even before it lands on the ground, it's considered as though it's already, it's considered that he's already Chayav. So you have the Isur Shabbos and the Mechira are both take effect at the same moment. The moment that it goes far enough into his Chotzer for him to be Koine of Kinyan Chotzer, already he's over on the Isur Shabbos because it's considered as though it landed in Rosh Hashanah.
What happens if you do this whole transaction takes place when it lands? And you put it
well, that's the question. If you're going to tell me that, if you're going to tell me that Papa is giving his answer according to the Chachamim, the problem is they don't happen at exactly the same kind of at the same time. Given the matyal chatzar beisoy, once it goes into the airspace of the chatzar, then already then koner, then the guy is koner. But he would only be chayev for the malacha of Shabbos only once the hanocha took place and it actually landed on the ground a second later. So then, in that case, you don't have kum limit the rabbi minay. So
at the same time, when you walk into the chotzer,
the point is he's throwing it into the chotzer. It takes a fraction of a second from when it goes into the airspace of the chotzer, within ten tefachim of the ground, let's say, and when it lands on the ground. If he walked it in, then that's the question. Papa's scenario was where he tells him throw it in. So that being the case, it seems that Papa's scenario would only work according to Rabbi Akiva. Actually, Tosfos talks about that. If it was an unroofed chotzer, then really even well above 10 tefachim, Rishus Yachad Ola Adla Rakia, Rishus Yachad goes all the way up to heaven. So therefore, there's no 10 tefachim to talk about. So rather Tosfos says that we're talking about over here that for example, he threw it in through a door, through a window, and therefore we can't talk about 10 tefachim or whatever, but we can talk about klutta kamisha hunfa. It's not just when, according to Rabbi Akiva, as soon as it gets into the Rishus Yachid, it's considered as though it landed already, whereas according to the Chachamim, we would say that not. Tosfos discusses certain details about that as far as Rebbe's opinion, and Rebbe's opinion that says that a house, we consider as though a house is considered full, and therefore when something goes in there, it's not even klutter, it's considered as though it actually landed on a solid surface, and you have that opinion, and Tosfos discusses a little bit about that. It's in Masechta Shabbos mainly. Anyway, the point is that so for that matter, Tosfos points out you also have a concept called Akirat Sora Hanocha, that even when he was first oiker it from Rosh Hashanah Adam to throw it, that's already considered. He's doing it towards the Hanocha, and therefore he can be Machayev, or he can be already Nischayev Benafshei from that point on. But the Makshin doesn't hold to that. The Makshin, the one who's asking the question in the Gemara, wants to not have to resort to that. So therefore, so we're asking that it seems it would work only according to the Akiva. So the answer is, fine, you can be talking about Shimon is saying, I won't acquire this thing until it actually lands. So therefore, the Issur Shabbos and Issur Gneva come at the same time. Normally, yes, as soon as it comes into the airspace of the Chotzer, then he'd be already koine. But here, we specifically said, I don't want to be koine until it lands on the ground. Where there you have the Issur Shabbos and the Issur Gneva come at the same time, even according to the Chacham. The Gemara continues. Rava Amar LaOlam KeRami BaChama. Actually, we can answer differently. We can answer like Rami BaChama, that we can go back to the answer about where he told him pick figs. You're asking what about the fact, as we said, Beis Din wouldn't be able to enforce the terms of such an agreement because they'd say he's Meschai Benafshe and therefore he's Bader. Actually, says Rava, no, because we find, for example, Esnan Amra Osra Torah VaAfilu Boal Imo. We talked about the other day, there's the concept of Esnan Zoyna, that's something that was given as the fee to a Zoyna is also to be used as a korban. Now, suppose that the Zoyna in this question was a man's own mother. He's Chayiv Misa for being Mazana with her. What if there was an agreement between them that he's going to give her an Esnan for having relations with her? That Esnan would nevertheless be also to bring as a korban. If he hadn't given it to her and she took him to Beis Din, then Beis Din would not enforce the deal and wouldn't make him pay for it. Nevertheless, since he gave it to her, we say that it still has an effect, and we say it becomes Esnan, it becomes also to bring as a carbon. So therefore, so the Itavale Kamon Medina, suppose that he hadn't come through with the animal for the Esnan and she took him to Beis Din. Mia Minan like Kum Havla Esnan. Would we tell him go give her Esnan? Of course not. He's chayiv misa. He's a kum lebe d'rabimine. Ella afal gabdaki katava lebe dinner loy amrinan le zil havla. So we see from that, even though she takes him to Beis Din, we don't enforce it. We don't tell him to pay. Kibin deki yohiv lo have esnan. But if he does on his own pay it to her, it does become esnan. Hochanami, the same thing as far as the figs. It is true that if Shimon were to take Reuven the Ganim to Beis Din and say, you took my figs, where is the animal you said you were going to give me? Give me the animal or give me my figs. Nevertheless, still, given to Kamaknu Lebahachi, the fact is he was Machnet to him and he did end up giving him the animal. Havi Mechira, it is considered a valid Mechira. In other words, before we were assuming that if a Mechira cannot be enforced and based in, then it's not a Mechira. Rava is saying that no, by analogy with the case of Esnan, even though a Mechira can't be enforced and based in, the fact is, if it did take place, it is considered a valid Mechira, and therefore it has the implications in Halacha that it has. So as far as Esnan, it would mean that the animal is also as Esnan, and as far as our case over here, it means he is Chayef at Hashlom Abav Chamisha, because there was a Mechira. Why the Braisa is saying ultimately he's Potter from the Tashloma above Chamisha. There was a Mechira here. He should have been Chayev, but and therefore that makes him Potter. So therefore we don't need to resort to the Papa's answer about him throwing it into the other Rishus. We can use Rami Bachama's answer about that he's picking figs off a fig tree and that's going to be his payment for the animal, because we're talking about he did in the end actually give the animal and therefore there was a Mechira. Okay. Sure.